better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
This one comes from Trailer Parker saying maybe Morris is directing that, but the OC is not following. Wonder if any resentment is lingering from the starting quarterback disagreement and the one more vote comment between Chad Morris and Joe Craddock. And by the way, yesterday was out on social media. It really got everyone's attention as Joe Craddock, because how it's set up is every Monday you have Chad Morris meet with the media first. And then shortly afterwards, he gives an opening statement, then he goes into questions. And then after that, you have John Chavis, the defensive coordinator, just answer questions. And then Joe Craddock comes in and answers questions as well. And yesterday, when you have a few of the media members putting out tweets and quotes and all of that of talking with the media members, the quote that Joe Craddock gave out that really got everyone's attention was, "I think they played not so well the other night," speaking about the offensive line. "I don't know what it was. It's something you may have to ask them." So, and here's the full
quote.
And
you're the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
And not just the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator.
That's right. And to be fair, here's the full quote in its context.
Yeah, I think that's something, to ask them. I agree. I think they played pretty well against Colorado State and not so well the other night. And, I don't know what it was. I really don't. I think that's something you'll have to ask them. But we felt like, honestly, we felt like Colorado State's D-line was better than San Jose's, and obviously we didn't go prove that in the game.
Listen, that's not – I know I'm no speaking expert, even though I speak for a living, but that's just not really something that you want to hear as a fan.
Nope.
From your offensive coordinator two days after one of the most, if not the most embarrassing loss you've had in football history.
It just makes me wonder if there's a fracture.
It sounds like
fracture
it to me.
Between the staff, particularly the offensive staff, on the same page? Is this coaching staff on the same page? This doesn't seem to be like I was talking about in the earlier segment. A unified message. That did not fit with what Chad Morris was saying. And that's my concern is you can't be successful when you're already talent deficient. And this is not a team that's overrun with talent. I think we'd all agree with that in comparison to SEC schools. How do you overcome philosophical or divides of any nature, physically or otherwise, with your coaching staff? Those are the ones that the players are looking to for leadership. And if they're not agreeing on things, maybe we're reading too much into it, but that comment leaves me some concern about, is this staff on the same page?
Mm-hmm. Because listen,
he didn't have their back there, John.
No,
I won't go as far as saying Joe Craddock threw him under the bus. I won't go that far, but you're the offensive coordinator, dude. I mean, the O-line is part of is under your purview. It's a part of your responsibility. Don't go ask them. I'm asking you. You're getting paid more than those other guys on that staff. You need to have the answers. This isn't a Dustin. I mean, yeah, we can follow up with Dustin Fry, but this isn't a. I don't need to go talk to Ty Clary about it. I'm asking you. You're the OC. Come on, man.
See, and that was the issue that I had, because even if you don't know, you truly don't know what it was. Lie to us. Lie to the fans. Lie to them. Just say, listen.
I'm with you.
Listen, I'll tell you what happened. We thought we had some good things going on in preparation, but, leading up to it, there were some things that we had to get the guy's mind right. They weren't on the same page. Just make it sound like you are in the know and you know what's going on with your offense.
One of the easy ways to have sidestepped this would have been just talk about Colton Jackson not being out there and recent injuries and haven't been able to get a cohesiveness. And, I mean, hell, I don't do that for a living, and I can tell you what I would have said. I would have talked about missing one of your starters, and how injuries have really caused a problem with consistency on the offensive line. Heck, if I can see that, anybody can see that, right? So, you don't think those are issues?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think they needed Colton Jackson on Saturday? Of course they did.
Yeah. And by the way, we got John in Columbus, Ohio, texting in our Cherokee Center hotline. He says, Craddock chose his words poorly, but if you listen to the whole interview instead of a soundbite, it sounds like he's trying to say that you'll have to ask them why they didn't play hard. No, we know that. That's the point. Is you're as an offensive coordinator, you got to know why you weren't ready to play. You got to know why your offensive line wasn't ready to play. Why they weren't putting in the effort that they should have. What was the reasoning behind them? You've talked to them, at least you should have. If there was issues, you shouldn't have talked to your whole offense. And so, and again, that's just, it's just adding fuel to a fire.
My problem isn't necessarily with the words Joe Craddock had. I agree they were maybe, he could have put some different words
together. Poor choice of words, yes.
But the fact that you don't seem to be on the same page as a staffer, that indicates there's a possibility of that going on. I need to see a unified message from every assistant back with a head coach. Whether you agree with the head coach or not, he's the boss.
That's right.
He's the one, you better be on his page, not everybody coming to your page.
Yeah. No, and that's how I feel too. I really do. And again, you know, if you listen, you can go to hitthatline.com and watch the interview in its entirety, and you can see it for yourself. But there's always also been, because adding into this, even before this game happened against San Jose State, there was always a little bit of a discretion or discrepancy between the play calling duties of Chad Morris and Joe Craddock, of who's actually calling the plays, who's actually looking and going through the game plans, who's writing it up, who's doing what between Joe Craddock and Chad Morris, who's responsible for what? Because so many times in college football, especially when you have an offensive guru like Chad Morris has been, and he's been an offensive coordinator, he's been a successful offensive coordinator, highly successful, people wonder, okay, if that's the case, are you the one that's actually running the plays and you're just using Craddock as more of like an assistant to help you out? But in some cases, though, it makes you wonder, is Joe Craddock really having more involvement, or has Chad Morris had to step in and reel some of that back? Like, we can't really get a full-fledged answer on what the reasoning is behind of who is doing what. And so that adds into this when you hear comments like that, is like, so how much involvement does Joe Craddock actually have in this offense? You know, when he's asked about the offensive line, and you know, he's like, hey, you're going to have to ask them, dude, are you not that involved or as involved as we believe you are? I mean, that's a question, a legitimate question. And it seems to have never really gotten an answer over the past two seasons. But it's just, I don't know. Again, I just thought it was a very poor choice of words for Joe Craddock in that situation. That may not have been one it meant. And who knows, maybe there'll be a follow-up to that and try to clarify some of his comments. But it was definitely a weird one to hear from the offense coordinator for the Razorbacks. Hey, folks, you know what's not weird? Sassies, just to be honest about it. Because, listen, when I go up to Fayetteville, which is pretty often, I have to go to Sassy's because they have two locations that are very convenient right there next to campus off of Weddington and off of College. And when I go in there, no matter what I'm feeling, they got me taken care of. If it's lunch and or dinner, which has happened once before where I had lunch and dinner on the same day there at Sassy's.
That's a great daily double.
I'm telling you, they got not only some great barbecue options, but if I was feeling a little healthy, maybe I just got done with the workout, I didn't want to go too crazy with it, I got me a salad or a wrap. Go a little on the healthier side, even though I didn't feel satisfied, so I went ahead and got the barbecue nachos afterwards anyway, because that just wasn't enough food for
me. I'm going to go low carb. Just bring me a pound of brisket.
That's right. That's right. Isn't that the keto diet or whatever? I'm pretty sure it's on. That sounds about
right. The Kraft
diet. Yeah, the Kraft diet. That's all right. Meat. But they got that. They got great burgers, and one of the best burgers you can get is called Moo Pig Suey. And if you're wondering what that is, just get you a great hamburger that they have to offer, and then just add pulled pork, barbecue sauce, and cheese dip. Queso, mozzarella cheese, and just put it all on a burger. It's fantastic. I'm telling you. So go to Sassy's. Trust me on this, folks. Go to Sassy's, where there are two locations in Fayetteville, off of College and off of Weddington, for lunch and or dinner, and you will not be disappointed. That is for sure. See, now I've just made myself hungry, and I'm probably going to have to drive up all the way to Fayetteville just to get some.
I'd pay about $50 for a pound of brisket right now.
Yeah. We'll see if they're on the waiter app, Tommy. See if they'll deliver down here to Fort Smith. Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. I don't want to hear like Henry Winkler in The Waterboy. I got no answers. I don't want to hear that. I was at the game, and Starkle, he had open receivers. He just passed over them and was trying to go for the bigger plays, and it bit him. But that's fixable. I don't know what in the world you do about this defense, really. I don't know. But you know, when these guys, what are they going to do when LSU puts up 60 on them, come out and say, well, you know, we really didn't play well, and then you go up against Alabama, and we really didn't play well.
60?
You know,
60? Danny, 60? You think LSU's only going to put up 60?
Well, they put up 60 on Vanderbilt. So,
yeah,
I mean,
65, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're putting 65 on, like, everybody. So
always before, we could depend on LSU having a mediocre to bad quarterback to keep us in the game, but it's not now, not this year. So, you know, we're going to have to fight to get better. You know, it's not just going to happen. And I feel sorry for these players who come out there. And what do you say? You know, we stink. The fans, you know, they're weary. They're tired. I know I am. I left the game 10 minutes into the fourth quarter so I could get back here before midnight. I was listening to the game, hoping they'd come back, but, man, I'd had enough.
You left because you didn't have faith. If you really felt like they were coming back, you wouldn't have left.
I didn't feel like they were coming back. I didn't.
And that's fair.
I'm glad they did. Yeah. I really did. And I was hoping they'd win the game, but, you know, it didn't work out that way. I just feel like the fans are just they need something good to happen, and it's not happening.
Yeah.
But I'm not ever, I will never, boo the Razorbacks.
That's good.
I might be silent. But anyway, nonetheless, go Hogs, and you guys have a good day.
You Thanks, too, Danny. I appreciate it.
Even with 2 minutes and 56 seconds on the clock and the game tied, I never felt like they were going to win the game.
No.
And Chad Moore said he felt like, all right, here we go, we're going to win the game.
Mm-mm.
I felt like San Jose State would get down there and take all the time off the clock and kick a field goal or score with seconds remaining and give Arkansas no time. They gave Arkansas just over a minute, and what do? Throw another interception, you know?
Yep. Just a bad decision. Very poor decision. And that's the thing, too, as far as going to Danny's comments as well. When he's like, I'm never going to boo the Razorbacks, and you feel bad for the players and all that. See, the thing is I do, too. I do, too. I feel bad for the Razorback football players because you know why? There's talent on this football team. Maybe not Alabama-level talent or LSU-level talent, but there's talent more so than Portland State, Colorado State, San Jose State, Western Kentucky, maybe even Ole Miss. There's more talent on this team than those teams. Now, I know it's young. I know it's inexperienced and all of that. But that's the thing that even makes it worse about this loss and about why the coaches are getting hammered a lot more than what even the players are. Because this performance is one that makes no sense given the level of talent that you have. I mean, if you just go through the list, I think Nick Starkel is a good quarterback. I know he struggled against San Jose State, threw 5 interceptions, so no getting around that. But I think he is a talented quarterback. He wouldn't have played at A&M if he wasn't, at least that an SEC-level talent.
Yeah, because coaches here haven't missed evaluations on quarterbacks either.
Yeah, never. But he got him. Rakeem Boyd is a talented running back. Devall Whaley, Cheyenne O'Grady, Trey Knox. I know Traylon Burks didn't play in this game, but you got some pieces there offensively that are talented. You got some defenders, some defensive players like Sosa Aguin, like Scooter Harris, that are really talented
guys. This team's not void of talent.
No. And that's where it gets so frustrating is because you have the talent. You have guys out there that can make plays.
And maybe you don't have the level, like you said, to win 3 or 4 SEC games.
But you have it to.
Damn it, you can beat San Jose State.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's why it's coaching.
Yes.
Plain and simple, it's Chad Morris didn't get the job done.
Yep. And this loss against San Jose State solely rests at his feet. Absolutely. Let's go back to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. James is in Fort Smith. What's going on, James?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How about you?
I'm okay. I was listening to your show yesterday. I tried to call in, but I know you were flooded. Clay hit the nail on the head when he said the way you get out of this is recruiting. Well, with that being said, I agree with him, but I think where they need to make their focus on recruiting is interior line on both sides of the ball and linebackers. We are subpar at both those positions. And I know some of these guys, a lot of the guys, you know, first year in the program, but there's no reason that an SEC team couldn't just line up and run over San Jose State. But we hadn't been able to do that in any game. My other concern is I thought at halftime, I thought, my goodness, when are we going to see a quarterback change? It just wasn't the guy's day. I mean, I thought that was equivalent to your starting pitcher walking the first three and giving up a grand slam. When do you make the change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as far as the coaching aspect of it, I hate to say this, but I've been a Razorback fan since 1969. And I've been in Little Rock for the USC games and the Texas games where we had great performances. I'll always be a Razorback fan. And I really hate to say this because I know in his mind, every coach in their mind is doing what they think is right. But this coaching staff is lost. Now, my concern for the remainder of the season is the guys on the field are going to start letting go of the rope. I don't think they have any confidence in their coaching staff, and I think that's going to get worse.
They did last year in November, so they let go of the rope.
Yeah, and I see it happening again. But back to my original comment, I thought Clay was exactly right. The way you get out of this is you continue recruiting. Well, who's Chad Morris recruited? He's recruited skill players. You can't protect your skill players, then how do you perform?
James, the way you recruit out of this, I think, in today's game with the changes in transfer portal. Look what Eric Musselman's done with the basketball program. You've got to go find something. Hey, not every player on the transfer portal is a good fit, or there's a reason they're on there. There's a reason they're not getting playing time elsewhere. But think about the transfer portal and where you'd be at quarterback this year without it. You know, I think the way you got to get out of this, you got to go find some linemen and not necessarily high school linemen. You need physically developed linemen that has some playing experience. Maybe you can find an answer or two via the transfer portal for this next season.
Well, okay, Tommy. So does that go back to development? I mean, we brought in two JUCO offensive linemen that were supposed to be stud JUCO players, but they haven't developed. Mm-hmm. Maybe they haven't had enough time. I don't know. Maybe the system's too complicated. I don't know. But at some point, you've got to be able to develop these players, and I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, no, you're right. Yeah, and appreciate the phone call, James. And just to go back to your point on recruiting, though, I kind of, as far as, listen, yes, you have to recruit and get depth and quality depth and all that. That's very important. But that wasn't the problem.
That wasn't
on
the
Saturday.
Problem. No. You had more talent than San Jose State.
Yeah. The yes.
They came in and whipped you. There wasn't any question who won the game.
Yeah.
San Jose State whipped you at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we keep saying Arkansas is more talented, but San Jose State was a better team. There's a difference between talent and team.
They were
ready
to play.
A much better team.
They were ready to play, man.
Here's the thing. 31-24 really doesn't tell the story of how dominant they were in this game. I mean, that's the thing. How much of the game did Arkansas trail 24-7 or 24-10? It was second half of the second quarter and all of the third quarter. The only time that San Jose State didn't play well was in the fourth quarter. And they were probably worn down a little bit.
Arkansas never led in this game. Not once. Not 1 second.
Nope.
They ever led in this game.
They briefly had it tied.
When it was at 0-0 and then when it went to 24-all. Yes.
Well, it wasn't 0-0 long.
No, it wasn't. Exactly.
Seven plays into the game.
So, it's just, again, I get it. That you have to recruit. And I think that Chad Morris has done a fine job in recruiting, all things considered. But
James's question is about development.
Correct.
That's a fair question.
Yeah. Because, you know, who... I know you had some guys that you don't have a whole lot of holdovers from last year, but from the guys that you have from last year that played, is any of them noticeably improved from last year? I mean, is Sosa, Geem, or Scooter Harrison noticeably improved? Or any of these D linemen?
Do we need to go over the defensive stats again?
Well, I'm just saying. That's what you're wondering about. That's what you're wondering is where is the development at? And, you know, and I know that, we're all questioning everything at this point. But at some point, though, my question, too, is becoming, you know, is there maybe so much emphasis put on recruiting and recruiting and recruiting and recruiting that there's not much time for coaching itself?
Yeah.
in game planning and making sure that your team is ready. Because all this stuff,
be onto something
and all this stuff about recruiting is great, and it's important. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you got to have talent. You got to have players.
The lifeblood.
Exactly. But you still got a coach, too, and that's important as well. Let's go back to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Clay's in Missouri. What's going on, Clay?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Quick question. I know we gave Bielema 5 years, and you usually give a coach a few years to kind of get his – you're talking about recruiting. Mm-hmm. You want to let him get his guys in there, and you know, it's kind of out with the old, in with the new sort of thing. But if Chad Morris does another repeat of the last, let's say he goes 2-10 or 3-9 this year, do we start kicking the idea around of getting rid of him and finding a new coach?
Yes.
Or do we give him four? Do we give him 3 or 4 or 5 years? What do we do?
If he goes 2-10 again,
that's
this
just
year,
what I want.
Yeah, if he goes 2-10 this year and they lose the rest of their games, which that's what it would mean, they go 0-8 in SEC play, they lose to Western Kentucky. You got to make a change, plain and simple.
And can we afford what is it, a $9.8 million buyout next year? I mean,
can you afford
just coming off an 11?
Can you afford two more seasons of this? I mean, just do the math on the seats that are not getting sold. Can you afford two more seasons of this? $9.8 million might be the bargain of the century if you could find the right guy to replace him.
All right. Well, that's what I just wanted to get your opinion on. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the phone call, Clay. No, I mean, listen, and I don't even think that that's being, you know, a hot take or anything like that. I'm just saying, if you go 2-10 back-to-back years, you lose to Western Kentucky at home. Maybe even the tie story.
Knowing that who's on the schedule next year? Oh, Notre Dame comes on.
And
you're going to have to win some SEC games next year with Alabama and LSU coming to your home schedule. Road trip to LSU. I mean, road trip to Notre Dame. We know what the schedule looks like. It doesn't get any easier.
So if you can't do it this year, where's the hope that you're going to do it next year?
You got to see how this season plays out. I don't think it's likely they win multiple SEC games, but the idea that they're not going to win an SEC game, this team, as we've said, has talent. They can still upset somebody. It would be an upset at this point for Arkansas to beat anybody in the, maybe even Tennessee, maybe even South Carolina. It would be an upset at this point. But Arkansas is not, as we've said, void of talent, and the realization, the possibility of winning some SEC games is still there.
And that's why, once again, I don't think that any coach should be fired in the middle of the season, because there are games left, things can happen, so just wait and see how it plays out first.
We've already talked about the staff. Who would you turn it over to? I mean, John Chavis would
John L. Smith, bring him back. He ain't doing anything.
Chavis seems like the obvious choice, but he's in the crosshairs now with a defense that can't keep people below a half a mile a game.
You're not firing anybody right now, folks.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Good morning, Tom. How are you, man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good.
Well, it's always good to have you on, so let's just jump right into it and try to make sense of what we witnessed on Saturday. Arkansas losing to San Jose State 31-24 in Fayetteville. I know we've gotten to hear from Chad Morris twice since then. I got to hear from the coordinators yesterday, Tom. Just want to get your reaction. Like, what happened in that? But try to make sense out of it for us, man.
Exactly. That's what people want to know most. How did it happen? And I spent a lot of time cogitating on the situation. And I have to say, you look at San Jose State and you look at their stats going in. They gave up a ton of rushing yards to Tulsa at home, and Arkansas busts off a bunch of rushing yards against Colorado State, and they're on this upswing, and you feel like all the factors are pointing in their favor. But those sneaky Spartans spent an off week really scheming up Arkansas, and it's just stunning to me that, I mean, Arkansas's got a talent edge. And it just didn't show up in this game as much. They were really motivated. Some of the things the Razorbacks said about, you know, being back on track and scoring a bunch of points and holding them to no rushing yards, got over there, and they were just super motivated, and they got better pressure on the quarterback. They got their athletes the ball in space better than the Razorbacks did. They tackled, you know, they tackled better in space, and they closed off the edges better than Arkansas did. So I think it was a combination of, you know, how motivated they were, you know, the old adage of who wanted it more fell to San Jose State. And I think they attacked the game better than Arkansas did. Now, if you subtract the interceptions, because Arkansas got down there in scoring range a bunch of times, then they hold on and they win the game in kind of a scary fashion. But it all kind of added up to a team that doesn't know how to – it's not experienced enough to know how to close out a game like that or to hold it off and then get that last key score. And so a lot of frustration for the Razorbacks.
Let's reconcile line play a little bit, because it certainly appeared Arkansas got whipped on both sides of the line. And at times, most of the game, San Jose State was only rushing three. Arkansas failed to convert a couple of fourth downs, turned it over on downs. Tom, how do you reconcile what happened on both sides of the line with Arkansas's lines of scrimmage?
I agree, and I should have mentioned that in my kind of my opening thing there. Wally nailed it today. He wrote a column and said that that's where the game was lost, and I agree. San Jose State was able to get better pressure and frequently rushing with three. And so Nick Starkel, you know, the timing that he had going in his head felt like he had to get the ball out. And on the other side, San Jose State got the ball out quickly. Their line protected just well enough. And we didn't hear a lot from those senior defensive tackles. Sosa Agim and T.J. Smith didn't hear their name very much. In fact, I think their top four tackles combined for two tackles in the game. And when they needed to, the Spartans got the ball out on the edge. I mean, those little swing passes in the flats, both of them, or two of them, broke for huge gains. And neither team ran the ball super well, but when they needed to, San Jose State got the 19-yard touchdown at the end of the game. So both lines, San Jose State won.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette via the Cherokee Casino Hotline right now on the Morning Rush. You know, Tom, something that we've discussed, and I don't know, maybe you heard it a little differently there, because I know you got to listen to both Chad Morris and or both Joe Craddock and John Chavis, the coordinators for Arkansas, yesterday in the press conference. But is there maybe a vibe just by listening to them and the questions that were asked that maybe they're not all on the same page? Maybe there's some disconnect there between head coach and assistant coaches. Do you get that vibe at all?
I don't know about a disconnect, but I think John Chavis said one thing. He got kind of someone asked whether or not how driven or what the attitude about the defense. Did they have the right attitude? And you could tell he got a little bit impassioned about his response, that no, it wasn't about the attitude and all. But he said in that the head coach, you can see the head coach looks at this defense and I can't remember the exact wording, but it was the expression of frustration for Chad Morris when in the defense. And he says, and the same holds for me. They don't have it figured out right now on defense. And I just looked to what they did against Texas A&M last year. They held Mon down. They picked him off twice. He didn't run the ball on him like he did in 17. And so Chavis has some insight there. I expect him to play better, but the whole parts of the whole have to fit together better for the Razorbacks than they did on Saturday. You kept looking for someone, some entity, or some couple of guys to rise up and just kind of take them and lead them to the win, and it didn't happen.
Eight games remain, according to the Football Power Index. Arkansas has the toughest schedule left in the country at this point. Tom, how does this thing go? How does Chad Morris turn this around and at least make it acceptable to the fan base?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it starts on Saturday. Arkansas, despite its recent, you know, several-year-long running woes, has played Texas A&M close. So you don't want to start this with getting blown out at A&M because, you know, the discontent level will raise quickly. They showed at times last year, even though it was a rough season, that they could scheme up and do some good things, as in the Alabama game. as in the way they played defensively against both Auburn and Texas A&M. So it's just a matter of keeping the players motivated and their spirits up and keeping them all together. And it's going to be a tough chore. I mean, your bowl hopes, you had to beat San Jose State to keep your bowl hopes alive. And when that doesn't happen, people start looking around for answers. And I don't know if we'll ever be able to fully explain how they lost at home to San Jose State. And that's going to kind of hang around Chad Morris's around his neck for his tenure.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, always appreciate you hopping on with us, Tom, man. We'll catch up with you on Thursday, all right?
Sounds good.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Clay, who's been patiently holding from Little Rock, is on the Cherokee Casino Hotline. What's going on, Clay?
Oh, not much, man. How y'all doing?
Pretty good, man. What you got?
So, I tell you what. I was on Twitter yesterday after the touchdown club meeting, and I saw something that it really grinds my gears, let me tell you. I was looking, and Hunter Yurecek was talking about how he told Chad Morris that he was his coach, and he had confidence in him, and he thinks he's taking the program in the right direction. And people were absolutely dragging Yurecek for that comment. And I get it. We're all frustrated. But at the same point, do you want the athletics director to go out there and throw his coach under the bus? Or do you want him to at least say in public that he's confident in him? I'm sure that's not the conversation they have in his office that they have over the phone. I'm sure they don't talk to each other and just say, yeah, it's all good. Let's keep moving along.
Yeah.
No, I highly doubt that's the situation. But think about it. If your boss came out and things weren't going good in your company and he came out and just dragged you in front of everybody, how would you feel about that? Would that make you want to do better at your job? It sure wouldn't me.
Yeah. I'm looking at my
we have a phrase around here. My bosses use this, that he's your guy till he's no longer your guy. And that's what you're saying here, Clay, is you got to support you have to support the coach publicly until you've made your mind up to move on, until you have a new plan. So Chad Morris will be Hunter Yurecek's guy till he's no longer his guy. That's how it works.
Yeah, I mean it's just so frustrating to watch some people just dragging Yurecek for saying that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, put yourself in his shoes.
He has no other choice.
Chad Morris is struggling. Nobody's going to dispute that. Just imagine if your boss was heaping it on you when everybody else was, too. You wouldn't be too happy about that either, I can promise you.
No, and I don't think any of us would. And that's the thing, is like when you want to hear something, people want to hear Hunter Yurecek come out and say, yeah, this is unacceptable. We'll see. You know, if he doesn't get turned around, we're probably going to fire him.
Yeah.
Like, that's what people want to hear, but you're never going to hear that. And as I've said many times, don't judge coaches off of games. Coach them off of seasons. Let the season play out. Now, at the end of the year, if things have not improved, if things are still bad, if you're having issues of transfers and the recruiting's not good, you know, make a move. But there's no reason. There's nothing. There's no benefit whatsoever to making some major change or major move right now at this current state. There's no point in it right now. You just got to just wait till it all plays out.
Exactly. If you do that, it's just going to make this problem worse. We're going to go through the exact same cycle, and we're going to have to deal with it again. In 3 years, we're going to be wanting to fire the next guy. I mean, it's something we got to figure out something. And I don't think firing a coach in the middle of the season is going to fix everything.
No. I think you're spot on with that analysis.
Yeah, and appreciate the phone call, Clay.
I mean, people have less confidence in the coordinators than they do the head coach. That's the sense I get, at least. You think people are more confident in Craddock and Chavis than they are Morris? I don't think they're confident in any of them, but they're less confident in those guys.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think it's all just a Bermuda Triangle of lack of trust.
No one's called in and said, you know, if Joe Craddock was running the team, things would be different.
No.
No one's called in and said, you know, if John Chavis was the head coach, things would be different.
No.
So, I mean, making a move to what? You're not bringing in a new head coach. This isn't a Danny Ford, Joe Kimes deal where you're bringing in it was suggested yesterday, bringing a consultant. You know, that's happened here before.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Ford started as a consultant with Joe Kimes and became the head coach. So, you know, he basically hired his coach, head coach. Wait, now, Joe Kimes was an interim to begin with after they fired Jack Crow game one of the 92 season. Later on in the year, Frank Broyles brought Danny Ford in to kind of oversee what was going on. And then by the 93 season, he was the head man in charge.
Yeah. So, again, you've
not unprecedented.
No, and you've been
we're not at that point. We don't have an interim head coach either.
You've been through these situations before where it's kind of all up in the air. Now, you haven't been through this bad of a stretch in quite some time, but you certainly have been in coaching situations before where you're unsure. You don't know if this is going to work out. And, you know, even in year two, it's kind of unprecedented for Arkansas because at least Jack Crow was into his third season, technically, before the move was made.
Barely.
And also, that was a different time, too, folks. Like, that was a different time.
You were marching into the SEC era.
Yeah.
Think about that. You had left your decades-rich tradition of the Southwest Conference behind and moved into a whole new league. Everybody's excited about that, and you fire the coach? Game one? Welcome to the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah,
I think Broyles was always apprehensive about hiring a coordinator. He'd spoken about that many times when he hired Jack Crow. You know, but that was where hiring coordinators was not his norm, and he wanted guys with a head coaching experience. He went another route, and it turned out to bite him. And he probably always questioned himself over the first 2 years with that. And then the Citadel loss really left him. He wasn't going to let this first season in the SEC get away from him. And that really has set a chain of events, a course for Arkansas football in this athletic program, joining the league and all of that unfolding. that really, it's, in some ways, you seem like you've never recovered in 28 years.
Yeah. But at the same time, though, my point is that it's a different time. It was a different time back then. And, you know, people keep saying that they want, you know, coaches need to get at least 3 years or 4 years and all that. You know, to an extent, yeah, I agree with you. But again, what was before we even started this season, before we even started talking about the results and these losses or these wins or whatever, the thing that we kept saying all in the offseason is we just wanted to see progression. We wanted to see what the product was supposed to look like going forward.
It didn't even have to be a bowl game at the
end. No.
That didn't have to be a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That would have been a bonus almost.
Right. You wanted to see going from a 2-win team where you did a massive roster overhaul where a lot of the players left. You brought in a lot of new players, some freshman phenoms, some transfers, some junior college players. You brought in all these things to try to make it work. And I don't think anybody, I can't remember a single person who called in that said, you know what, I expect 9 wins this year. I don't think there's anybody that. And it was just about seeing the progression, even more so than it was wins and losses. It was about seeing this team make progress. And when you're sitting in your fourth game of the season and you're 2-2 and your two victories are against Portland State barely, Colorado State okay, nothing that you can really hold your hat on, and your two losses, one was, you know, still to an SEC team, so not as really that embarrassing, but one of them was horrendously embarrassing. You start truly starting to consider, okay, not only do I not see progress, I may in a way see even regression.
Yep.
Because I don't see any part of this team right now that's far and away better than what it was last year. Now, I've seen glimpses of it. I've seen Nick Starkle look really good at quarterback. Better than what they had last year. You've seen guys like on the defensive side of the ball make some plays, guys like Cameron Curl, some plays here and there, some games here and there, some series here and there. That makes it look like it's better. But overall, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how you look and how you're progressing. And right now, how can you even say that this team has progressed when you lose a game like you do to San Jose State at home? Like, this is a worse loss than any of them you had last year. It's like you can't do it that way.
All right. So can't change the past, obviously.
No.
So what has to happen the rest of this way? You'll never erase this loss. You'll never get rid of it. You'll never remove it from our mental archives. But what has to happen over the course of these, 8 games that are left to say, all right, Chad Morris does have the program pointed in the right direction. We're not where we want to be, but at least we're headed that way. What miracle has to happen to get you to the frame of mind that you're confident, at least, in Chad Morris, and he can lead this program into the future.
You got to be competitive in these games and win at least two.
That's who wins?
That's me.
All right.
Which gives you, and assuming that the win against Western.
And when you say competitive, you mean all of them?
I mean,
you mean the Alabama and LSU games, you've got to be within a couple touchdowns?
I mean, you just got to take each game by what it is and how it looks each as it plays out. But I'm talking about, listen, Bama and LSU are two different animals. You know, if you lose by three touchdowns, I mean, let's be honest. That was going to be difficult no matter
40.
What. Yeah, but against A&M this weekend, can you at least in the fourth quarter, when you enter in the fourth quarter, can it still be a game?
You'd take 24-17 a year ago? You'd take that again, right?
Absolutely. Do that. Be competitive in it. When you go up against Kentucky, you can be nice to win, but even if you don't win on the road against Kentucky, be in and in the fourth quarter. Be competitive. Finish out games. Make good decisions.
See, for me, you got to beat Western Kentucky, and you got to win two SEC. You've got to win an extra. Everybody said win at least one. Got to win at least five is the floor. You know, I preached that sermon all offseason. Well, now you got to make up for it. You didn't win all your non-con games. Can't fix that now. You can win the one that's left. To me, you've got to beat like Mississippi State and Kentucky. Kentucky and Missouri. You got to win two of those three to make up for what's happened. I'm not changing my expectation on five or my desire for five. My expectations may be shot. But that's what needs to happen for me to still believe in Chad Morris come December 1. Come, you know, the Saturday after Thanksgiving that, yeah, this is the guy for the job. I don't know that even that would completely convince me, but it would get me back on board a little more because right now I'm off the train.
And if they don't?
And I think this train's headed off the cliff right now.
And if they don't?
I think you're going to have to go through another year. I don't think the leadership above Hunter Yurecek, unless it just went horribly wrong in these last eight games, would have the guts to make a move at this point.
So if you think that they went 3-9 and their only other victory was against Western Kentucky and they go 0-16 in SEC play in the first 2 years of Chad Morris, you don't think a move will be made?
Nope. I think they're afraid of sending the wrong message to the college coaching community.
I think they're sending the message to the college coaches community that they're accepting losing.
And to hell with the message you're sending your fans and recruits.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I think that would be one thing. The lack of the hand wringing that would go over about a $9.8 million buyout that would be due. All of these things that would factor into the decision. It wouldn't be just one thing.
No, but you shouldn't. You know what?
You know what? It should be Hunter Yurecek's decision and not the chancellor's, not the board's. It should be one man's decision and let him live or die with it.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is though, that if you're not willing to pay that buyout for whatever reason, then you shouldn't assign the contract with those buyouts.
They made a career out of paying buyouts.
Yeah.
Problem.
Yeah, I know. But in a perfect world, you'd love it just to be Hunter Yurecek's decision. And it's like that at every place. So it's not like it's just Arkansas's unique. It's like that at every place.
Yep.
The money makes the decisions, and they may have to have a decision to make at the end of the season if things don't start getting turned around and turned around quick.
Yep. Hey, my sheet of paper here says I'm supposed to tell you about the bacon and the burgers at Arts. But I'm like Starkle. I'm calling an audible, man. I'm going to fling it downfield right here because I want to tell you.
Pick?
I'm going to tell you about the thing I've eaten. I might. I'd like to intercept some of this kicking chicken because this is something that has been on their specials board. And I finally tried it like a month ago. I'm telling you, like the last four times in, it's been all about the kicking chicken. If you have not tried, I know it's a barbecue place and they got great burgers and they got wonderful brisket and ribs and pulled pork. But, Ty, you can back me up on this. The kicking chicken at Arch Barbecue is unreal. They fry up a big chicken breast, perfectly breaded, then they dice it up. And I don't know what this sauce is they toss it in. It's just spicy enough to make it, you know, live up to the name of kicking chicken. And then they just mound up a big pile of it and give you a side to go with it. I recommend the fries. You can go onion rings. But, you know, if you want to go something else, you can do that. Ty, I think this has quickly become my favorite. My go-to at Arts is the kicking chicken.
I think I need to put my stomach up to the mic because it's growling right now. Yeah,
I'm telling you.
It's the go-to.
I'm supposed to tell you about pulled pork and smoked meats and burgers, but I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you that the kicking chicken's become my new favorite.
2 weeks ago, I was in there and I asked Wade. I was like, Wade, I always get the hog wild burger. What else do I need to get? And he said, do the kicking chicken. Because I was between
tremendous.
That and the burn-ins, and then now I'm addicted and now I'm
they
stuck on that.
They dice it up and give it to you in a big pile. But I think this would go great on one of their salads, and I bet you they do that for you. I'd like to have just a sandwich made of it. So try the Kickin' Chicken. If you've been to Art's a bunch and you've tried everything, trust me and Ty. Have you had it yet, John?
I have.
What do you think?
I think it's amazing.
The Kickin' Chicken's unbelievable. Art's Barbecue, Rogers Avenue, next door to Aaron's in Fort Smith. Kickin' Chicken. Remember that next time you're at Art's.
It's one of those restaurants I try something different, though, every time I go.
Yep.
But I have tried it, and it is amazing.
You had the barbecue nachos when we were there last week.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy because, you know, usually barbecue nachos can get be hit or miss depending on what type of chips they use. You don't want your nachos soggy. You don't want soggy chips. And that's what Art's does. They make sure that they do that. So, but hey, listen, I'm all about some food now as well. But, you know, we had the conversation, of course, and you know, both things happening yesterday with Chad Moore's meeting with the media and then Hunter Yurecek at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. You know, I think that Hunter Yurecek, when he was asked questions very, you know, direct about the performance that they had on Saturday, first off, it was a tough position for him to be in because you know that when they scheduled this whole thing for him to come down and speak on this Monday, he was made to be a point after San Jose State because that was, hey, that should be a win. So there should be no problem, no controversy that's going along with it. But Hunter Yurecek spoke on it and was very candid about his comments about how he felt after that loss.
What do you want me to say? How were you feeling Saturday?
I was disappointed. I think Coach Morris opened his press conference with that way. You know, really thought after the Colorado State game and the way that fourth quarter played out that we had found a way to win a game and kind of flip what we had been going through for the last couple of years as a football program. And so it was disappointing to see how we came out and played on Saturday. All due credit to San Jose State. They probably played their best game in a long time. But that aside, they shouldn't come in to Fayetteville and beat the Arkansas Razorbacks in their home football state.
Colorado State was fool's gold. That's all it was. We should pay more attention to the whole picture of this season. Struggle to beat Portland State. Looked terrible doing that. All right, you get a new Ole Miss. It is a conference game. You struggle in the first half. You put a new quarterback in, and you're convinced that, well, if you just had Nick Starkel for four quarters, you might have won that game. But you still lost. Then you get Nick Starkel in there, and it's we forget the fact that the game was tied at 34 going into the fourth quarter. O'Grady makes a tremendous play. Colorado State makes a few mistakes, and Arkansas ends up winning probably more impressively than that game really was. The Colorado State game was fool's gold, and we all bought into the fact that, well, Nick Starkel's now in command. Things are going to go well moving forward. And how bad is San Jose State? There's no way they can compete with an SEC program. It was fool's gold. The problem is you're in the SEC, but you're not playing at an SEC level. Nowhere near it right now. John, we all got duped by this 55 points in this fourth quarter, and it turns out that the Colorado State game was just fool's gold. That's all it was.
Well, and the reason that myself and I guess Yurecek even said, and a lot of people started buying in after that Colorado State game, is because they had done something that people have been wanting them to do and they have not done it under Chad Morrison in a long time. They finished a game. They went to the fourth quarter when the game was on the line, when it was getting tough, and they went out and they made the plays to win. That's why people, and myself included, thought that maybe this was them finally turning the corner, not to go out and to win nine games, but to turn the corner to where they're finally growing up, they're finally ready to take on the season, and they're finally ready to go out and start imposing their will on teams that are lesser than them, which is what I expected against San Jose State. That's what I thought Colorado State was going to show. And when you didn't even get it a week. You couldn't even make it a week without everything just being blown up and destroyed from what you even accomplished at Colorado State.
But go back to the Colorado State game. This is why I'm saying it's fool's gold. What happened? O'Grady makes a play of a lifetime that's, I don't want to say it's a fluke play because it was an individual effort. But that's not going to happen every game where a guy breaks free from five men to score. All right? That's not going to happen. The opposing starting quarterback is not going to get injured and go out of the game. Now, he wasn't playing wonderful, but there's a lot of people that believe that game would not have been maybe the outcome it was. And Arkansas was struggling until he went out. I mean, there was just some things that happened along the way where Arkansas got a couple of scores I'm not going to say they didn't deserve them, but we're maybe a little less than conventional late in that game that just made it feel like more of a dominating performance than it was. And we all bought in to Nick Starkel being the difference maker, the new straw that stirs the drink. And we didn't pay attention because we were in club dub, and we didn't pay attention to some of the facts that were going on and some of the things that really happened in that game.
But you also have to remember the context of where it was, because in comparison to what you saw against Portland State and Ole Miss, which was the only games we had to see, everything was different. Because, yes, I get that the fourth quarter happened, but also you had offensive drives that were successful.
I agree. I
nickel and diming down the field.
But we didn't think Nick Starkel could come out and just puke all over himself.
No,
like
because
he did against San Jose State.
Because in the five quarters we've seen him play, or the six quarters we saw him play this year, he was pretty phenomenal. I mean, that's
clearly, though, we put too much stock into the performance of this team, particularly fourth quarter against Colorado State, and just thought this thing will be easy.
Mm. But we also put too much stock in Chad Morris thinking that this whole thing was going, they're going to be ready to play against San Jose State and they won.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.